Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
The NFL free agent frenzy just started picking up. Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. NFL free agency will get underway tomorrow. Players can agree to terms with teams today, and we just found out that a player will be hitting the market tomorrow. We found this out a few hours ago. The Dallas Cowboys will release the franchise's all-time leader in passing yards and in touchdowns tomorrow. Tony Romo will be free to sign with another team, and in the process of all this, the Cowboys solidify their faith in Dak Prescott, who is soon to be a sophomore quarterback in the NFL. Jerry Jones and Tony Romo had a conversation apparently yesterday that eventually led to Jones agreeing to release Romo. According to ESPN, Romo did not have to pressure Jones to release him. He told Romo that he had waited to determine whether another team might offer the Cowboys something in a trade. And look, we've discussed this on the show. It's just not possible. I mean, in today's market, a soon-to-be 37-year-old quarterback who has had back-to-back injury-riddled seasons, it's just not going to happen. You're not going to get anything for this guy. The Cowboys obviously failed to get anything or a reasonable offer in return for Tony Romo. And so they're going to save $14 million against the cap this year. Now, Romo's still going to count $10 million against the cap for the upcoming season and $8.9 million next year. But the Cowboys will bring in more than likely Josh McCown to replace Romo as a backup, which I think is an ideal fit. Things have worked out for the Cowboys, because Romo, at the end of the day, was a guy I thought would probably be with, you know, on this team for the next year, maybe 2 years, to help groom Dak Prescott. Prescott continued to get better as the season went on, and there's just no place for Romo on this roster. You can't pay a guy that much money to sit behind a second-year quarterback. So now, the next Romo story is, where does he go? And I thought just maybe we would be able to avoid that topic. I thought there was a slight chance that Dallas would keep him aboard. I still think they do the right thing by letting him go. The Broncos have been mentioned amongst the teams interested in Tony Romo for a very long time. And I think it's probably a good place for him if they can put somebody up front to protect him. And again, it's a very John Elway type move. You're talking about a guy that has proven himself in this league. And I don't think the Broncos are going to have the same success with Romo that they had with Peyton Manning. But, you know, I think it's a reasonable, I think it's a reasonable fit. A team that you have to throw out of the equation is the Cleveland Browns. Tony Romo does nothing to help Cleveland's situation. Nothing. That team is too far away from contending. You might as well draft a quarterback. You got two first-round picks. If you don't want to use the first overall pick on Mitch Trubisky or DeShone Kizer, take one of the three that are going to be available. When I say three, I'm talking to Sean Watson, Kizer, and Trubisky. Take one of them with your second first-round pick, and I think you're okay. Go Myles Garrett one, take a quarterback with that second pick. Throw the Browns out. There's no way that's a landing spot for Tony Romo. The other possibility, I really think, is the Houston Texans. They need a quarterback, and just looking at it on paper, those would be the two most reasonable spots for Romo to land, and I hope that Romo can stay healthy over the next 2 years, or next year of his career, however long he decides to play. I just don't see it happening. And as much as I like the guy, at the end of the day, availability will always trump ability. And he hasn't been available. That's why he's looking for a new place to play. One of the most sought-after wide receiver free agents has already come to terms with a squad. Brandon Marshall is going to continue to play home games in New York. He's just going to be wearing a blue jersey, a two-year, $12 million deal. Those terms were agreed upon earlier today. Fantastic move for both sides here. Brandon Marshall just made Odell Beckham Jr. a better wide receiver by agreeing to terms. And with that, Brandon Marshall is going to be a better wide receiver. Put him on the flip side of Odell, and now you have Eli Manning under center. It's a great move for both teams. I think that Brandon Marshall is going to be extremely productive. I thought maybe this guy would end up in Pittsburgh, but the Giants, it looks like a spot made in heaven for him. So pull off one of the receivers off the free agent chart. Brandon Marshall is going to go to the New York Giants. There was a trade today. The New England Patriots deal a fourth-round pick and will receive Dwayne Allen, the Indianapolis Colts tight end, along with a sixth-round pick. This spells the New England Patriots, right? It means the Patriots are not going to re-sign Martellus Bennett, but I think they got enough use out of Bennett. He's now an unrestricted free agent. And we talk, you know, what's weird is we talked about this a couple of seasons ago. Bill Belichick has always had high praise for Dwayne Allen. And then he re-upped last offseason on a four-year $29 or $30, $31 million deal, something around that, with the Indianapolis Colts, which was somewhat shocking. And now the Patriots are going to have him for the final 3 years of his contract. He was a part of that 2012 Colts draft class that was just incredible. I mean, they had Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton, and Kobe Fleener. They did work in that draft class. Now he's on the way to New England along with a sixth-round pick. At some of the news and notes coming out of the NFL, Pierre Garçon has committed to sign with the San Francisco 49ers. And this is a really crazy deal. He's going to make $16 million in his first season deal, to say the least. But Garçon really reinvented himself in Washington under then offensive coordinator Sean McVay. Of course, he contributed a lot to the career year that Kirk Cousins had, and now he's going to go join Kyle Shanahan. But a little bit of a crazy deal. Now, he can't sign this contract until 2 p.m. tomorrow, but he'll make $16 million again in his first season. And then after that, the terms are still a little bit murky. I'm not sure what it's going to look like. But the Niners released Torrey Smith on Monday, and so they were really expected to make a big splash at wide receiver, and now Pierre Garçon is going to have an opportunity to be the number one wideout for the San Francisco 49ers. Take a look at some of the other free agent notes from throughout the day and the frenzy that is about to pick up. Matt Schaub is going to stay put with Atlanta. Tyrod Taylor is going to have a restructured contract with the Buffalo Bills. They're going to finalize that deal tomorrow. And then also they will bring in Patrick DeMarco, who played for the Falcons last season, played fullback, of course, for Atlanta. So he will join the Buffalo Bills. A couple of minor notes there. The biggest offensive line note today is that Detroit got a little bit better. Ravens free agent offensive tackle Ricky Wagner, who is definitely the best right tackle available, has agreed to terms with the Detroit Lions. So Riley Reiff is probably done in Detroit. If you're a Lions fan, you're not going to shed a tear there because Ricky Wagner is the real deal. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic. A great get there for the Detroit Lions. We jump back over to the Redskins. While they're going to lose Pierre Garçon, they will retain Vernon Davis. He announced on his Snapchat account that he has re-signed with the Redskins for 3 more years to team up with Jordan Reed. And so that's just a couple of news and notes coming out of the NFL with free agency. If we have time a little bit later on in the show, we will discuss that. Let's move over and take a look at the schedule tonight in the NBA. As far as the slate goes, it is a full slate of games. We begin at the 5 o'clock hour, Chicago at Orlando. Atlanta will play host to Brooklyn, and we get Charlotte at Miami. 6 o'clock's a busy hour, New York at Milwaukee, Toronto at New Orleans. Minnesota will play host to the Clippers. The Pistons will be at Indiana and Sacramento at San Antonio. Also, right here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz travel on the road to take on Houston. Utah looking for their fourth straight win and hoping to chip away at that lead that Houston has over them for the 3 spot right now. Well, the West, it's a 4.5-game lead. 7 o'clock hour tonight, Washington at Denver and Boston at Golden State. 8:30 tip-off in that one. It'll be televised on ESPN. We've got a break for just a moment. Good show lined up. We're going to talk some high school soccer. Coach Troy Winter is going to join us when we return, and we'll look at Emory High School's schedule. They'll play three games in 2 days this weekend in St. George, and we'll also talk the NBA and the MVP discussion, which is really heating up. Who's it going to be? I'm going to tell you right now, if it's anyone outside of Russell Westbrook, I'm going to be mad. I had this conversation about 3 weeks ago, and I thought, okay, maybe you can make a case for James Harden. That's gone now. It's Russell Westbrook's to lose. Let's give it to the most valuable player. Oklahoma City does not have a great supporting cast, and Westbrook continues to put up freakish numbers. He's about to average a triple-double, 18 games to go in the season, and he's still averaging one. We'll talk about that and more when we return. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Spring sports off and rolling at the high school level. You just heard during that last break, a couple of exciting games last night. The Emory Spartan boys baseball team taking it to North Sam Pete, grabbing a 7-2 win. Easton Gordon was phenomenal offensively in that game. And then the Carbon boys squad, they opened up the year. Unfortunately, it was a loss as they fell to 4A Springville. But it's great to get spring sports back and off and rolling. Now this weekend, it'll be a busy one for the Emory High School soccer squad. They will travel to St. George. They have three games in 2 days. Friday, Saturday, they'll take on Tooele, Summit Academy, and then Saturday against Delta. Three very, very good squads. And then after that, the season just gets off and rolling. Joining us right now to talk a bit about the upcoming season, we have head coach Troy Winter. Coach, it is great to get you on. Great to talk some Emory soccer. Thank you again for the time today.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you as well, too.
No problem. No problem. My pleasure. Coach, we'll dive right into it. I mean, you guys are going to open up the season this weekend. You have two games in 3 days, two on Friday and one on Saturday. Kind of a brutal stretch as well. You guys will take on Tooele, Summit Academy, and Delta right out of the gate. I mean, that's a tough three-game stretch.
Correct. It is. Yeah, it's going to be a good challenge. It'll be a good opportunity to see what the boys have ready to go at the beginning of the season here.
There's such a quick turnaround, Coach, going from winter sports into spring sports, and really it's such a compact season. I mean, you guys start this weekend, the season wraps up at the beginning of May, so really there's not a whole lot of time as far as prep goes for these boys. What are some of the things that you do during the off season to prepare the team for what's going to be a lot of soccer in a very short amount of time?
You know, that's a very good question. We, you know, as far as the summer programs and the winter programs that we have going on right now, they do a lot of club soccer here locally. We travel quite extensively, you know, through the winter playing futsal, indoor soccer, and then through the summer there we have several tournaments that we'll hit through the summer as well, too.
So it sounds like it's well balanced, but I'm sure you guys have several multiple athletes on the team as well.
We do, correct. Yep, and that's always the key, is getting them multiple athletes, you know, tuned up with, you know, from going from a basketball to a soccer ball, or from, you know, wrestling to, you know, to soccer as well, too. So it's definitely a challenge, and it takes, you know, a little bit of time for sure.
In your mind, Coach, which sport translates best with soccer, or is there one?
Basketball, I think, translates good as far as passings and zones, you know, and wrestling is good as well, too, as far as hard work and, you know, a lot of dedication as well, too.
Well, Coach, let's talk about the roster this year. I mean, you guys had a pretty decent season last year, to say the least. You finished above 500 in league play, and we can talk about that in a moment. But who are some of the kids coming back this year that you expect to really have an impact and kind of lead this team?
You know, we have several players. We're going to be returning, you know, about eight starters from last year. Our defense is going to be anchored by Jacob Hunt, Hudson, John Bailing. You know, right now, those are the two standouts on defense. Our midfield area, there's going to be some play from Tanya Allred, Brock Winter, Parker Sermon, and Jimmy Bailing as well, too, that it's going to be, you know, really key, you know, for us in them areas and stuff. And we've got one key player, Dalton Bennett, that he's kind of bounced around in several positions. He's kind of been multi-talented, so we're looking for some good play from him as well, too. At our forward position, it's kind of a coin toss there. We have a couple exchange students, one that's going to be playing that forward position, so we'll see how that goes. With a couple returning, you know, Dallin Ward, Spencer Hadfield, you know, in them positions as well, too. So,
how much of last year's success do you believe will translate to this year for these kids who, you know, they were able to log some serious minutes for you? I mean, does that play a factor looking at what you guys were able to accomplish last year?
Absolutely. This year, I believe that, you know, the things that we were able to get accomplished, the excitement that we had from the end of the season last year, has translated, you know, through our summer program, through our winter program, and the excitement that we have going on right now. So there's some, you know, some core things that have been going on and stuff there that I really think that the boys will come out and, you know, be really excited and ready to go right off the bat. So
if we talk about last year, I mean, 7-5 again in league play, 10-6 overall for you guys. You just miss out on grabbing that 3 spot. I mean, Gunnison gets it because they finished with a tie instead of a loss, so they were 7-4-1. You guys get American Leadership in the first round of the state tournament, and you fall 2-0. I mean, American Leadership is known as it's a pretty good soccer program, right? I mean, that, even though you lost that game, it's something to build off of.
Absolutely. ALA is a very good soccer team. We played them the year prior and got throttled. The boys come back and they said no matter who we play, we want to make a good showing and make sure that everybody knows that, you know, as they come back, you know, next year and the year after, that they know that they play Emory High and, you know, we play hard and stuff. And you know, ALA, the coaching staff and the players were very, very complimentary of Emory High. You know, they're soccer players here and their good attitudes and their hard work and, you know, willing to just put that effort forward. So
again, our guest right now is Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School soccer squad. They'll begin the season this weekend. Coach, we'll look ahead and go over the 2A Central. I mean, we're talking Manti, Wasatch Academy, Gunnison, Grand, South Sevier, and North Sevier. All in all, we're talking about 6 other schools grouped in with Emory that are traditionally very competitive in every sport. So, you know, you can look at who they're bringing back, but it probably doesn't matter. I mean, you know that it's going to be a tough outing every time you guys take the field in league play.
Absolutely. Each game, there's no give me games. You know, in this league here, in this division and stuff. You know, there's teams that are stronger and weaker. But if we decide not to show up on a weaker team, then they'll take it to us and stuff. So we have to be on our toes, you know, and be ready to play every game.
Manti finished last year at 10-1-1. I mean, do you expect them to be a major player once again for the top spot in the region?
I do. I think Manti, they're returning a lot of players. They traditionally have had a program that, you know, is built from the youth up as well too. And you know, I really honestly feel, you know, as a coach here, I feel that we between ourselves and them will be contending for that first place, that region spot.
I know Wasatch Academy, it's the same boat in every sport. It's hard to kind of prepare for a team like that because you just don't know what they're going to have when they come into each season. In the world of soccer, they go 9-3 last year again. They're typically a major contender for a state championship. Is it very similar to basketball and where they have an advantage that it's hard to prepare for going into a year?
You know, they do have a little bit of an advantage and stuff. It's not as characteristic as basketball, for example. You know, as far as the recruitment or the opportunity to have the athletes that they have. I'm very good friends with the coach there, and they actually his task, I feel, is harder than mine because he has to take a nucleus of kids that have never met each other, have never known each other, the first day of March, and make them a team. You know, and stuff. So, but that not saying, they do have a lot of kids or individual soccer players and show up and play soccer as well too, so they'll definitely be a contender again this year.
Three games in 2 days for you guys this weekend. What does the week of practice look like for you and your team?
This week has been a lot of fundamentals. We've just been working on the fundamental stuff. Not been setting a lot of scrimmage time, so that full 11v11 is going to come to, you know, it's going to be a little bit harder this week as far as the tournament goes. But fundamentals, and if we don't do them fundamental things, then everything else will fall apart. So that's what we've been working on mostly.
Not a lot of time to get prepared for league play. After this weekend, you guys dive right into it, and you'll travel to Manti on March 16th, which is just 8 days away. So between now and then, what are some of the things that you as a coach look for specifically this weekend when the team is out on the field?
It's going to be a lot of hard work and effort. Those that that have that drive and want, you know, want to play soccer, have a desire to, you know, to want to be successful on the soccer field. And so that's what we'll kind of, you know, watch for this weekend. It's kind of a preseason opportunity to see who's going to stand out, who's going to give us 110%, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's a lot different than some of the other sports. I mean, basketball, we're talking about 10-12 games. Baseball, much of the same. I mean, you get 10-12 outings to really develop what you want developed before you dive into league play. That's not the case with soccer. I mean, you guys dive right into it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it makes it a little bit more challenging. And that's again, you know, goes back to our off-season workouts and stuff, making sure that our off-season workouts are where they need to be to help us, you know, be ready at that time, you know, and stuff when that league play does start. You know, get a couple preseason tune-up games, and then we're right into it.
Well, Coach, it is definitely fun to talk some Emory soccer. I really appreciate you making time for us. Best of luck this weekend as you guys will travel down south to St. George, and hopefully we can catch up again next week and kind of recap how the weekend went.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I appreciate it so much for the support and the recognition for these boys. Thank you very much.
No, definitely. It's my pleasure. Have a great day, Coach.
Thank you.
Again, Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School soccer squad as we talk about their new season. Off and rolling this weekend. Again, Twilla, Summit Academy on Friday, Delta on Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll continue to follow the Emory soccer squad throughout the entire season. We're going to break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to talk NBA basketball. Tonight, the Utah Jazz take on the Houston Rockets. That's a very interesting game. Very interesting game. Houston's playing well right now. The Jazz four games back of the Rockets for the three spot in the Western Conference. Do they match up well with the Rockets? Plus, there's a lot of MVP chatter going on in the NBA. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you go any other direction other than Russell Westbrook, you're wrong. I think it's that simple. We'll talk about the MVP race as well when we return here on Drive Time Sports.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Joining me right now over the telephone to talk some NBA basketball, great friend of the show, we have Jameson Welsh from BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. And there are a lot of storylines that are really picking up in the NBA as we get down to the final 20 games of the regular season. Jameson, as always, I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Not a problem, Jordan. Thanks for having me as always, man. Definitely appreciate it.
Let's talk a little bit about the MVP race first off. Russell Westbrook, this guy has put together one of the most historically great seasons in NBA history, and that's not an overstatement. That's not becoming a prisoner of the moment. This guy is averaging 32 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and Jameson, even more impressive, he's gone over 40 points four times while accumulating a triple-double. It's absolutely insane. Had a 58-point performance the other night. Yes, it was in a losing effort, but still, this guy is playing on a completely different level from anyone else in the league. And, you know, I always go back to this. As far as individual awards go, they don't do a whole lot for me outside of the MVP in the NBA. It is the most coveted individual award in professional sports. I put it right up there with the Heisman, which, of course, is number one. So we have these individual awards, and I think the MVP stands above the rest in the professional realm, which means it gets a little bit more attention. I am absolutely flabbergasted that people voting on this award actually believe in their hearts and their heads that we have a two- or three-pony race for the MVP in the NBA. It's insane to me.
Well, the MVP award has different definitions of different people. Like, it's a tough thing because it's not, the MVP award is not the best player on the best team. It's not, you know, who has the best stats. It has different definitions to everyone. So it's really difficult to gauge exactly what it means or what it should be. It's just one of those things where if you ask 10 different NBA people, you're going to get four different answers on the MVP this year. That's just kind of how it goes. Like, you're going to, someone's going to say LeBron. Someone's going to say Russ. Someone's going to say Harden. Someone's going to say Kawhi. This is kind of how it goes. It's, everyone has their different, you know, thoughts and opinions on the award. It's one of those things where if you named Russell Westbrook MVP, I wouldn't be mad at it. If you named Harden or Kawhi, I really wouldn't be upset either because I get it. Those guys are having awesome seasons on teams that are contenders and win a championship. So I get it, but when Russell Westbrook's having a triple-double every other night, it's pretty special. And again, like I said, I understand if someone wants to give him the MVP. If he wins it, I have no problems with that at all. But the history of the league, and we know how things work out, it's just almost impossible for a guy that's a seventh-seeded team out west to get MVP. Like, that's just not going to happen. I mean, Kobe didn't have the triple-doubles in 06, but he had a similarly you know, great year that Russ is having, and we know how that turned out. He came like in fourth or fifth in an MVP race. So we'll see what happens, but if you're the seventh seed in your conference, it's almost impossible to win the MVP race. That's just how it goes. The history of the league shows that.
It shouldn't. I mean, I know that's the way it is, but look, at what point in time do we stop trying to be cute about this and give the award to someone on the best team, and we actually start looking at the historical significance? I mean, this is a stat that is unbelievable. He leads the league in usage at 42.1. If it holds up, that's going to be the single season usage, the highest single season usage percentage in NBA history. He also has a league leading 55.8 assist percentage. That will be the third highest in NBA history. So at what point in time do you stop looking at who's on the best team and who's contending for an NBA championship and look at the historical significance of what an individual has actually accomplished? Because I'm telling you right now, there are certain players in league history where if they were putting up this type of season, and there would be no doubt about it, the MVP race would have been decided 2 or 3 weeks ago. I just can't wrap my head around it. I know, I agree with you. It means 10 different things to 10 different people, but in this case, it shouldn't. It's irresponsible because this is one of the greatest individual seasons in league history.
It definitely is. And here's the thing. If OKC gets on, if they win a few more games and they wind up being the fifth seed out west, or even the, I don't think they can catch the fourth seed, but if they get back into that cluster of teams, then anything is possible, because then you have a guy that, if he gets the fifth out west, then you're like, okay, well, he had this great season with this team and he's the fifth seed, then, you know, you have, your argument's a lot stronger. But man, it's an amazing season. It's going to be a shame. It'd be like someone batting 400 in baseball and not winning MVP. Like, that's pretty much what it's like. It's going to be like that, because this has never been seen before. A guy's getting a triple-double on average every other night, it seems. Like that. And if he's not getting a triple-double, the nights he's not getting triple-doubles, he's very close to getting one. So it's one of those things where, man, it's a remarkable season, but the way the media votes for this award, it's very tricky. It would not surprise me to see Kawhi Leonard steal this award, though. I can see Kawhi Leonard with another month of the season, another 5 weeks of the season. If he does what he keeps on doing and the Spurs get the one seed out west, I would not surprise me to see him be the MVP award in mid-May.
No, I agree with you. And again, when I say that it's clear cut and dry, it's no knock on what Kawhi Leonard has accomplished. I love Kawhi. I think he's one of the best two-way players in the league. And then you look at, you know, James Harden. He's put together a magnificent season. But Jameson, when you look at the history of sports, there were a couple of awards and a couple of accomplishments that were almost mythical to us. Okay, I never thought that we would see another baseball player win the Triple Crown Award. And then we see it. You know, Miguel Cabrera steps up and he wins the Triple Crown. I never thought, every year I wanted it, but I just thought, I'm never going to see a horse win the Triple Crown. And then along comes American Pharoah and he does it. In that category, there's somebody averaging a triple-double for an NBA season. It's happened with Oscar Robertson way before your time, way before my time. So it's almost like mythical that it could happen in this day and age. And it's not set in stone that Westbrook is going to do it. But I think if you average a triple-double for an entire season, yeah, I put that individual accomplishment up there with a horse winning the Triple Crown or with a baseball player winning the Triple Crown, because it never happens. I mean, we've just never seen it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's one of those things where it's definitely jaw-dropping. We're all in awe. It's at a point right now where when Russ drops a triple-double, we're not even surprised anymore. And again, we have to find a way to come to a common definition of MVP, because right now there's no common definition, unfortunately. No one has a common definition. Is it the best player on the best team? Is it the guy who's most valuable to his team? Is the guy who's had the best season? What does the MVP actually mean? And until we get a common definition of it, we're going to have the same problems every year.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Again, our guest right now is Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Let's move on and talk about something else that's happening in the NBA. A pretty historical feat last night for Dirk Nowitzki. He joins some elite company in the 30,000-point club. One thing that is not debatable, right? He's the greatest European player to ever grace the NBA. You look at who he joins in this category. I mean, Kareem, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, and now you throw Dirk Nowitzki in that category. Pretty epic. I mean, that's a legendary historical moment for Dirk and for the Dallas Maverick franchise.
Yeah, no, Dirk is, when it comes to Euros, he's the best Euro guy. International guy gets tricky because Akeem Olajuwon came over from Nigeria to come to college here, so that's a little different story. But in terms of European, yeah, Dirk is the guy that, he's the guy. Powell is probably second, you think about it. But Dirk is definitely first. What he's done for the game, he's made it acceptable for bigs to shoot three-pointers and being able for that to be a part of your offense and for it to be accepted. He also made it acceptable for a seven-footer to be without primarily a post player. Because when he came in the league was primarily a post league. You have a big, you throw it down to him, he does some post stuff, and that's that. Now you have bigs that are primarily jump shooting bigs. Every team has a pick-and-pop big, it seems now, and he's a big part of that. So his imprint on the game historically is huge, and it'll never be forgotten. But he's the first big that has that kind of range, that kind of handle, and that kind of feel for the game when you can go 30 feet out and, just shoot it with no problems at all. And he's a true matchup nightmare. He's a great, great player, amazing player. And it's crazy because if those seasons and those 6 and 07 turn out differently, then we're thinking about Dirk in a totally different light, and we're probably thinking of him as a top 20-type player, maybe even higher. But those seasons didn't turn out the way they did. But he still had a great run in 2011 that will never be forgotten.
There's always that conversation. If you're down by one, who do you want to take the last shot? You can take anybody in NBA history. And I've always said this. I'm going to go back to it. There are two guys that stand out amongst the rest. Give me Kareem and give me Dirk Nowitzki. And people sitting here saying, really, over Michael Jordan, over the likes of Kobe Bryant or Larry Bird? Yes, I'm going to tell you why. If you need a shot to win the game, those are the only two players in league history that are going to get a good look. There's no doubt. There's nothing. I mean, you're going to get the shot off. Anyone else in league history? Yeah, they may be a little bit more clutch at certain times. But look, if you need a shot to win the game, you know that Dirk Nowitzki is going to get it off. You know Kareem's going to get the skyhook off anytime. I think that you really have to put Dirk in that elite category as far as scores go. Last night just proves it.
Well, here's the thing. When it comes to the kind of basket you need, the thing with Dirk is he's so versatile that you can get a three. You can also put him out from 15 feet out, and the look is going to be good, and the shot's going to be good. Here's the thing. With Dirk, for the longest time, I believe for over a 10-year stretch, he was the best guy in, game-winning situations. I think it was like him, Carmelo, and I think Kobe and a couple other guys. Joe Johnson was high on that list, Paul Pierce. But he was the number one guy on that list with under 30 seconds, game-winning or game-time situations. He was very good in because, like you mentioned, he can get any shot off. You're not blocking his shot. You're not going to block his jump shot. That's not going to happen. So if he gets to a spot on the court or if you run a play where he's wide open, he's going to hit the shot. And in his prime in the mid-2000s, he was amazing. He was a true sight to see. And he was unguardable. He's a guy that even if you got physical with him, that worked a little bit. But at the same time, if he was able to get his shot off so quickly, man, it was very, very difficult to deal with. But that being said, I think his imprint on the game is more than people think of at the moment. And we won't think about it until he retires and is long gone from the game. But his imprint on the game, man, having a guy at 7 foot, being able to shoot from anywhere, being able to handle the ball a little bit, and be accepted, for that to be accepted, and now you have a whole generation of guys like that, is huge.
We're going to end by talking about the Utah Jazz tonight. They return here to KOAL. They take on the Houston Rockets. I'm really, really intrigued by this game. It's an 8 p.m. start time, or a 6 p.m. start time, excuse me, right here on KOAL 550. We'll send you out to David Locke and Ron Boone for the play-by-play call. Jameson, this is an important game. The Jazz have won three consecutive. They got a very important three-game stretch. You get Houston tonight, Oklahoma City on Saturday. Both of those games are on the road. And then what could be a potential first-round matchup against the Clippers on Monday at Vivint Smart Home Arena. I think we're going to learn a lot about this Jazz team. You say, 64 games into the season, we haven't learned enough about them? Yeah, they're a 50-win team, but this is a very important three-game stretch, and I think it'll set the tone for what to expect the rest of the way for the team.
Well, here's the thing with the Jazz. The Jazz, they just have to find consistency. Because how many times in the year do we see a good win fall by a bad loss? And every year, young teams have to be expected, but they have to find consistency, especially going to the playoffs. Now, the one playoff matchup, I don't think that's good for them. I don't think the Clippers are a good playoff matchup for them. I don't. I think the Clippers do have a lot of experience, especially in the early rounds, and that would be a problematic matchup. But with that being said, I do think the Jazz can hold their own versus pretty much anyone they are able to match up with. I think Memphis, they're able to hold their own again. I think they can hold their own against the Clippers, but I think that's a bad matchup just personnel-wise. So we'll definitely see. But for the Jazz, they got to get consistency and they got to stay healthy. Their biggest issue this year has been health. They've missed guys in and out of the lineup the whole year, whether it's been George Hill, whether it's been Hood. You know, they've missed key guys, and they have to be healthy. If they're going to do anything this year in the playoffs, they have to stay healthy. With that being said, though, this is a huge, huge turning point year for them because talking to Gordon Hayward 2 years ago, basically it was like, all right, we're in a wait-and-see situation. We're in a rebuilding situation. Now, to see all that come together and now be a playoff team, it's pretty impressive.
Jameson, it's always a pleasure to talk NBA basketball with you here on the show. Thanks for always making time for us. It's the fun time of the year. Again, the final 20 games of the regular season, so we'll get you on again here relatively soon.
Not a problem. Thanks for always having me. I'll see you soon.
We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this.
Hi, this is Jason Kidd. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Bescarini, KOAL, 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I love the MVP chat with Jameson last segment. I want to go back to it. I can talk about this all day. I think it's a conversation that is worthy of an hour show, to be honest, because it is compelling this year. And I understand where some people would say, okay, the best player in the world is LeBron James. I get it. I believe he is the best player in the world. He wouldn't crack my top three this year for the MVP voting. He just wouldn't. Cleveland has been pretty good this year. I mean, they're at the top of the Eastern Conference, 42-20. They're pretty good. They're a good basketball squad. However, I think Kawhi Leonard has had a sensational season. And as far as two-way basketball goes, hard-pressed to find a better two-way player in the league than Kawhi Leonard. James Harden has put together a terrific season. I did not expect the Rockets to have home court in the first round of the NBA playoffs this year, and they're going to. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that James Harden has put together an MVP-type year. But Russell Westbrook is doing something very, very special in OKC. We're down to the final 16 games of the season for the Thunder, and this guy is averaging a triple-double still. And I don't believe he is stat-hunting. You know, you have to watch Oklahoma City play. I don't believe he's stat-hunting. I don't. I believe this is a guy that is cut from the same cloth as an ultimate competitor in the league, cut from the same cloth as like a Kobe, a guy that will go all out at any given time in a game, up 30, down 30. Russell Westbrook is out there running laps around the competition. I think he's that guy. I don't think he's stat hunting. Do I believe he's as good as LeBron James? No, I think LeBron James is the best all-around player in the league. But where do you draw the line? Do we give the MVP every year to the best player, or do you give it to the most valuable player? And there's no way you can sit here and tell me that Russell Westbrook is not the most valuable player in a league where his team, his supporting cast, is not very good, and he's averaging a triple-double. Four times he scored 40 or more while grabbing a triple-double. And I mean, just compare his numbers to LeBron James. Less efficient, shooting 41% from the field compared to 53% from LeBron. A variable that is not included in that stat is LeBron was playing with Kevin Love, was playing with Kyrie Irving. He's got talent around him. Tristan Thompson is down low. He's got some really solid players around him. Russell doesn't have that. Victor Oladipo has been hurt. Steven Adams is not very good offensively. He doesn't have that. So I get it. 57 players in the league average at least 13 field goal attempts this season. LeBron is first in field goal percentage. Russell, 54th. But his shots are coming with the floor way less spaced out, completely different. There's too many variables that go into that statistic to hold that against Russell Westbrook. 35 years since an MVP was not on a team that won at least 50 games. The Thunder this year, they're at 35-29, so it's not going to happen. They're not going to get to 50 wins. They haven't had a 15-4 stretch at any point in time this season, so they're not going to get to 50 wins. But you can't use that against him, can you? Because again, statistics seem to work in favor of certain media darlings. Kobe Bryant was phenomenal back in 2005-2006. He was the best player in the NBA. There's no doubt about it. Averaged 35.4 per game. And he had guys like Smush Parker and Chris Mim on his team. Steve Nash averaged 18.8, 10.5 assists. He had a terrific supporting cast. He got the MVP, and that was a huge snub. And the big drawback on Kobe was the Lakers were a 7 seed. How about Magic Johnson over Charles Barkley in 1989? Magic was amazing that year. He had 22 points, averaged 22 points, 11 assists per game. But again, he did it with a Lakers team that was insanely deep. And if you go back and you look at the statistics, Barkley definitely made a case for the MVP that year. It goes down as a snub. I believe Shaq, the year he was with Miami, the second year Steve Nash won it, Shaq was probably snubbed that year as well. Michael Jordan was even snubbed a couple of times early on in his career. It happens. But as long as you have individuals voting and there's no clear method to the voting, are we giving it to the best player in the league? That's LeBron. He should win it every year. It's the most valuable player. You take Russell Westbrook off this Thunder team, they're well below 500. Well below. And they're not sniffing the playoffs. Refuse to believe it. This guy's played with a chip on his shoulder, and you cannot ignore statistics. You can't. I'm a stat guy. A lot of people say there's more to the game than stats, and I get that. But when a guy is doing something that hasn't happened since Oscar Robertson, you have to pay attention to it. A lot of people don't like Russell Westbrook. I get it. He plays for a small market team in OKC. I get it. He's the rightful owner to that award this year, and there's no doubt in my mind. Quit being a fool. Give this guy the trophy. And I bring this up with the MVP because it is the most coveted individual award in sports, next to the Heisman Trophy. And again, there's some really fine lines with that trophy as well. Does it really have to go to the best quarterback or running back on the best team in the country? I don't think so. Not necessarily. A lot of variables you can look at there, but until there is a clear, distinctive method to the voting, we're going to have this kind of stuff. And some people believe that these awards should go to the best player in the game, regardless if he's the best player statistically. So it's always going to be up for interpretation. Out of time on the show today. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. Always fun to talk to Jameson Welsh and, of course, Coach Troy Winter. Great to get some Emory soccer on here as well. I'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.